have you ever felt?
Are you listening?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the People in Tech podcast. I'm your host, Caleb King. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about developer boot camps, aka dev boot camps. And in the studio today, I got my main man, Chris Huey. Chris is a developer evangelist. He works out of the Galvanize Immersive Program. And Chris is going to give us an insight of all things dev boot camp. We're going to talk a little bit about tech in Phoenix. And we're going to talk about some career opportunities and some success stories out of dev boot camps. This is an episode you don't want to miss. Let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
What's up, Chris? Thank you for being on the People in Tech podcast. I'm very happy to do this interview today. And before we kick off with the questions, do you have anything to say to the listeners?
No, I'm just excited to be on with you and share kind of a little bit of the Phoenix tech market that I get to see.
Awesome. So let's just get into it, man. Really, let's just start off by you describing how you got into the tech industry.
So, funny story is my background's much more on the finance side. So, oddly enough, it was kind of a mathematical finance. So I did take a couple linear algebra Python classes and did a little bit of coding, but definitely not a more engineering-focused background. Coming out of college, I went into corporate finance, accounting stuff, quickly realized I couldn't really compete with I guess, you know, these resume type businesses where people have been doing it for 5, 10, 15 years.
Right.
So for me, it was kind of just being the most technical person. So, you know, that kind of first translated into, you know, kind of putting things in databases, pulling things out of databases. And I kind of just towed that line of your finance business intelligence guy. So you didn't traditionally, you know, you have your financial analysts that do a lot of the modeling off of the data, but you have to then talk to the business intelligence guy to kind of get that back. So I guess that was kind of my first kind of part was that I, you know, I kind of served both roles and companies kept kind of needing that. In terms of, you know, certain medium-sized companies were like, oh my God, we have a SQL guy. We had a, you know, financial analyst that knew SQL, and now we don't. So that's kind of what kind of got me further in my career. I always had a passion for web development. So, you know, I would go home and I would, you know, read about different front-end technologies. And it was Python that I you know, ended up using at work, but it was kind of that passion for development that was in my free time that kind of made it so I could latch it on. And then, you know, oddly enough, fast forward, Galvanize was like, hey, we have a position. Well, actually, it wasn't even Galvanize that reached out. It was a position for somebody that's comfortable with data science and web development. And I was like, there's not a lot of us out there, you know, that sounds interesting. I love, you know, all things tech, and kind of a weird, I guess, happenstance is I thought about going to Galvanize 4 years ago, because I lived in Colorado, and it was kind of that point in my life where I was like, hey, do I really want to just have the skills that I have and kind of latch them on in a finance world, or do I really just want to go be a developer? I actually knew about Galvanize, and the first time I heard that this position was with Galvanize was actually in the interview, because it was a recruiter, so I didn't know anything about the company until, you know, our awesome GM called me up and told me it was Galvanize, and I was like, I'm one of the few people you could actually say that to, and I actually know what that is. And then, you know, from there on, the rest is history, I guess.
Oh, man, that's a really cool story. I didn't even know about that. So really going from a finance background, really being like business intelligence, understanding data, big data, and analyzing it, having that technical skill set. For our listeners, because I know what Galvanize is, but can you just give us a high-level overview of what Galvanize does and what your role is over there now?
Absolutely, yeah. So Galvanize, I always think of it as a platform to connect those that are in a technology company or building a technology company and connecting them with technical talent and kind of putting a community around the whole process. Our main kind of function as a business is bringing industry and technology education together. So we have currently in the Phoenix campus, there's campuses across the country in 7 different states. But for Phoenix, we have 110 companies that work out of the space, primarily technical companies, but these are entrepreneurs, smaller companies, larger companies that are, you know, trying to have innovative teams. And just putting it in a open collaborative space that isn't traditional to the work environment. You know, it's very co-working space, but it's more than that. It's like a community kind of around that and kind of facilitating that. And then on the education side, we do programs for web development and data science for people that are either looking to make a career change with our, you know, kind of full-time immersive programs, like our web dev immersive program is 6 months, or, you know, even just people that are trying to add on kind of other educations, whether it's, you know, Python to kind of apply to their work life or some cloud computing for enterprise. A lot of different kind of offerings are there, but our main focus is for people that really want to make that career change. And then I guess more my side, which is also on the education, but kind of where I live is more like the events side. So the real community aspect, because we have, you know, a giant 70,000 foot warehouse, a lot of things we do is about building the community and kind of doing these either technical events or, you know, community events or networking events or, you know, anything in between to kind of force that interaction and force that collaboration with more people. So at my role, which is evangelist, which is actually my title, which is common in the tech world. I think what's a little different about me is that every other technical evangelist that I meet kind of lives in kind of a hyper focus of being a true ambassador for their company, first and foremost, which I also am, but I feel in a lot of ways where Galvanize is in the community is it's not just being an ambassador for Galvanize and kind of pushing the message of what we're trying to build. It's overall for the community because that's what Galvanize represents to Phoenix right now. So a lot of the things we do is for the betterment of the community of Phoenix to look down in, you know, 2-3 years and see Phoenix as a tech hub. And that's kind of ultimately the goal that we're really aspiring to, along with, you know, definitely encouraging people to interact with our brand and be a part of our community is always my goal. But I like to think of it more in terms of what we're really trying to build with the city is just as important of what Galvanize is in its physical space is kind of the message that we're trying to put out there.
Okay. So you covered a lot of things, and I'm actually happy you spoke on a lot. Mainly, one thing I do want to recap is for our listeners, Chris has an amazing job. Like, I am so envious of his position because if you follow him on LinkedIn, you're constantly going to see this great event to attend to, whether you are currently a developer or you're interested in getting into development or whatever the case is. I would highly suggest to go check out some of the events at Galvanize if you are in the Phoenix, Arizona area or any of the Galvanize camps that he actually mentioned earlier. So, Chris, point of this episode, we're going to be talking more about dev boot camps. You kind of highlighted what Galvanize does. You highlighted what your role is. For our listeners, how would you describe what a developer boot camp is?
I'll preface this so that I don't get killed by anyone from Galvanize that might hear this, because we really do fight against the term dev bootcamp in terms of our program. And I'll kind of I'll kind of go into that a little bit more. But ultimately, what our program, other programs are meant to really focus on is for those people that really want the hands-on technical experience to work in a field instantly in development. One of the beauties of the world of tech is that and I kind of mentioned this earlier when I mentioned the words resume business. Technology is not a resume business. It's a portfolio business. I always compare it to somebody that's, you know, maybe a photographer. I don't look at where they went to school. I look at their photos. I look at what they've built, or what they've done. Technology is very much the same way. So your background is not as critical to the hiring process as of their professions, because it really comes down to what skills you have and what skills you can demonstrate. And that's kind of the world that dev boot camps kind of live in. Is they're like, hey, traditional education is about so many hours of focused development. The rest is biology, English, maybe an engineering class that's not focused on coding. And then it kind of goes into the theory, whereas a more technical school approach, a more industry-focused approach, right? That's our goal, is to be as close to the industry partners so that they're hiring our students for what they need, is a very hands-on world. It's very much solving these problems, and you know, in the dev world, solving problems in code is the most valuable thing you can do. More than I can read every book in the world, but the reality is problems in the industry live in a depth. They don't live in a breadth. So me knowing hello world in 7 different languages doesn't serve me or anybody else, but me knowing, you know, JavaScript to its core does. So that's kind of the world that these niche kind of education platforms have kind of focused on, is focusing on the hands-on skills of building every day and solving problems in code. And that is in turn appreciated by employers, because again, they're not on the normal education cycle, you know, of, you know, this semester, that semester. And at the same time, they're actually working with the technologies, right? Like, the technology changes every year. So traditional education is not going to teach you React. React is the most desirable skill right now in the market, whether right. You want to, you know, fight it or not. Like, but they don't get those skills because that's just not something you can't do this, because next year it might be Vue. The year after it might be some paradigm I didn't even expect. And this is just in web development. That's not saying, you know, machine learning. Same thing happens, you know, down those rabbit holes when TensorFlow comes out. Docker, the whole DevOps world, you know, gets shifted by Docker, IoT, you know, all these different technology focus areas kind of get moved out by the different technologies. So it's hard for other educational platforms to be as close to that industry need. So that's kind of where at Galvanize we focus on, and kind of I think the other people in this space are focusing on.
Okay. And I'm going to have to just piggyback off a few of those points, because one, I 100% agree. For me, I studied business and then I transitioned into the development world. So I'm pretty much a self-taught developer. But yeah, I would agree with you that the programming that I did in college, I'm talking about PHP, I think it was like 5.3 at the time. We're writing inline code into HTML. CSS is in the HTML file, like everything to make like this project work was fine. And the second I get my first real-time job, they're like, oh my gosh, all this is wrong. So when you hear things like that, I it's really cool to hear somebody like you mention that boot camp, or maybe not boot camp is the right word, but maybe what would you like to call it, Chris?
Well, so it's when I say we don't like to call it a boot camp, it's because boot camps traditionally in the majority of other programs in this world live in about a 3-month window. So they feel that 3 months plus some kind of self-study is where you need to get at you know, the ability to get hireable. We do not think that's true. I personally, I'll kind of say, I think about 600 hours is what's required for you to write code and learn code to be able to get what I would say a job. As you know, there's a difference between learning a skill and somebody paying you for that skill. So when I say that we don't do it, it's just because our programs essentially double any other one that's currently in the Valley and double most other ones. So that's kind of why I push back. So we call ours immersive programs versus boot camps. But that's, you know, again, that's kind of the difference in offering in the world of differentiation that you kind of have to live in, between us and kind of others. But I think as a general term, bootcamp is an actual, like, it's a used and knowable term. Again, this is more just an internal brand thing that we right. kind of fight with, because we do about 700 hours of education and, you know, kind of comparing that to an ASU engineering degree, pretty similar to hours of in-person engineering focused classes at a, you know, getting a CSE degree.
Right.
And that's kind of where we live. So that's the only reason I say that.
Okay. So that's good to know. And yeah, like, I guess for me, I don't want to say it's a bad connotation, but yeah, when I do hear boot camps, I really do feel people hear that. And I've worked with people in the past where it's like, hey, I used to work at McDonald's. I'm about to spend thousands of dollars on this 3 month boot camp. And then say I'm going to get a job making $60,000, $75,000, $100,000. So, you know, the pitch of it sounds great. But me and you being developers and having experience, I'm sure you hear that and you kind of cringe where you're like, you're not going to be a great developer in 3 months. It's a journey. You got to put in more time, more hours to really hone that skill set. So I guess that leads into my next question then. What is the audience for people going through the program like you were speaking about? Like, is it people, like you said, transitioning from this a career, and what type of career are they transitioning from, and like things you've been noticing?
You know, it's pretty open. I'll tell you, we've had anyone, even in our more recent cohorts, from 18 to their 60s, that have graduated. So just to give you kind of a diversity, and even one of our last cohorts was probably close to about 40% female. So, you know, I'll definitely say that there are more males that are interested. But I don't think that's a connotation. I think that that's in some ways self-selective, because I think a lot more females are kind of finding interest in kind of development and going into the field. For professionals, it's pretty open. I think it's just people that are kind of looking at what they really want to do with their future. And they see technology is going to exist no matter what. And every company is essentially a technology company, whether it's, you know, Kimberly-Clark making toilet paper products, you know, they still need their logistics systems, probably one of the most sophisticated, you know, software solutions there are, to, you know, the hip Googles, the Apples. So I think it's whoever is kind of intrigued by that as a profession, or really wants to really work more with their brain as a profession. I think that's one thing that I'll say. I wouldn't say it's other professions that I see kind of more or less, or other types of people. What I see is just people that have done a job that maybe they weren't using their brain as much, and they just want to start using their brain more often in their day job. Okay. If that makes sense. And that's not to say anything negative, like, but in the finance world, I will tell you, a lot of my job, I did not use my brain. There was just certain things that you were rote doing. And it's not, you know, anything against any profession. It's just, there's some jobs where you have to jump through mental hoops way more, and development is definitely one of them, because it's constant, you know, problem solving.
Right. And I would totally agree with that statement. So my next question for you then, a program like Galvanize, and then let's just say the other program, we call the other program boot camps because that's what they like to call themselves. How would you say that compares to a traditional computer science degree in 2018?
So I would say for other programs, I think, and again, I'm open in kind of my thoughts on a lot of the other programs, because I think that you need more. But I think they're designed that you're supposed to continue educating yourself. So they're going to teach you, get you jump started. So I think of a lot of the other programs more in terms of a jump start than a direct get a job. But for our program, I'd say our program is very similar in terms of the traditional side, because we do cover algorithms. So a lot of those stuff that you will see on some of the technicals that ask about big O notation or whatever. So we touch on that, but we don't really live in a world of theory. Right? Like, take a database, for example. If you study a database in college, and I had the pleasure of doing that, and it was terrible, you kind of live in this world where you're like, set theory. Like, set theory does not, you know, help me connect to a SQL server and you know, query the database. You know, Venn diagrams are great, but just mentally in my head, I can figure out what, you know, these different joins are and these different things are by physically working on these problems and getting these result sets back and kind of connecting the databases and pulling data from databases, versus, you know, looking at, you know, theoretical equations that kind of let me understand how I should, you know, partition a database or index a database mathematically. But when it comes to practice, I probably couldn't build, you know, like one of the things I had to do was rebuild essentially financial statements in a database. Those are the kind of real world problems that you have to solve.
Right.
Versus the theoretical, like, underlying just use of a database. So I think that's really where at least for us, we live in is the hands-on practice problem approach, as opposed to more underlying theoretical view of things, but maybe not as much problem solving, maybe not as much industry related application building, that kind of stuff.
Okay. So before we go into halftime, I guess I have one more question for you. What type of jobs can a person get after attending either the immersive program at Galvanize or a boot camp from another program?
So junior developer, I think, is pretty much the main job that everyone focuses on, whether that's, you know, maybe a front-end web developer, maybe, you know, a back-end person. One of our students got a job in Python. We don't teach Python. You know, it's kind of more in that junior engineer world. So wherever that applies. And luckily for us, I will say that our model is a little different than the Phoenix, some of the other competitors that do similar things in Phoenix, because I think they focus more on selling themselves to students and saying why they should go there, versus maybe focusing on the industry partners and making sure that their students are going to get hired. We take and have taken a completely different approach, that we built relationships with employers and proved to them why they should hire our graduates. And that is ultimately now kind of what is then fueling the interest, I guess, on the front end, and as opposed to us trying to tell students why they should come here versus somewhere else. We're just saying, hey, our students got jobs at Allstate. They're working at Choice. They just got hired at USAA. You know, SAP hangs out, PetSmart hangs out and does hiring events. That's kind of the world I think we have focused on. It is really that hiring piece. But yeah, it's traditionally junior engineers.
All right. Well, that is the first half of the show. We have to let our sponsors do what they do best. We have to figure out how to get paid on the People in Tech podcast. So please bear with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Halftime going to be real short. But guess what? We got our very first message into the podcast. And I got my man Jason hitting us up. He's been checking it out. He's a day one listener. And I'm not even going to really talk more, guys, because Jason says it all in his message. I'm going to let him do the speaking. Let's get it.
How you doing? My name is Jason Kavnis. I think you have a great concept for this podcast. I really like what you're doing. And I also have my own podcast called the Kavnis HR Podcast, where I talk to small business owners, founders, people in tech, startups, and HR. I think there might be some opportunity for us to cross-collaborate and share guest lists. It'll also be great if you could be a guest on my podcast. Let me know what you think. Have a good day.
Welcome back. We have Chris talking about developer boot camps, immersive programs, and really to try and break into the tech field. So we covered a lot in the first half, but I kind of want to transition a little bit, Chris, and really talk about what most listeners who might be considering these programs, what I know they're thinking of right now. How much does a person have to pay for a program like this?
Yeah, so I mean, again, I don't know the other programs. I kind of have an idea. I can speak to our program. So for ours, again, 6 months, it's $21,000. We actually have a discount for anyone that's listening if they apply in the next 3 or 4 months, that's actually 40% off. So it's a hell of a deal. But traditionally, our program is $21,000 for 6 months. And I think a lot of the other ones kind of live in a 12 to 13 range for their 3 months. And again, this is when I say 6 and 3 months, I'm thinking full time. There are part time programs that, you know, kind of they might be 2 or 3 days a week for 6 months. That's, you know, that's closer probably to the 3 month side in terms of actual hours, right? Because everything, I kind of try to live in the hour world because it gets so segmented. But yeah, that's typically around the cost.
Okay. And then that would lead me to my next question. After you go through this program, of course, you want a good return on investment. So what are some of the data or some of the numbers behind what people are making after they attend?
So I think we have average numbers, but it's kind of averaged across multiple regions. So I'll kind of focus on Arizona. I would say 50 to 60, you know, is probably average. Actually, I don't see anyone making less than that. So I'd say probably 50 to 65 is a traditional range for our students, with, you know, several that have luckily kind of pushed way past that on the higher side. But I think in this market, 50 to 65 is pretty reasonable for people coming out of different programs, just because our cost of living and just the demand here is kind of about that.
Okay. And let's say I'm a student, I go through Galvanize, I finish the program. Now, is it kind of like, hey, you're on your own, good luck applying? Or is there companies that you guys partner with that are going to give me like first look? You know, how are opportunities presented to the graduating students?
Yeah. So for us, again, we, I want to preface, I've kind of went down the web development mentality for most of this podcast. So I will leave with the caveat that I'm not talking about our data science program, because that one, we kind of expect you to know Python, expect you to have mathematics, and then we're just teaching the tooling. So, we also have that, but, kind of for what I'm talking more is in terms of people that have zero experience, and then 6 months later, you know, they have a junior developer job. So kind of with that, for us, again, everything we do is about community. And that's why I love my job, why I love Galvanize, and I love how we're approaching this. I couldn't work for anybody else because I believe so much that the Galvanize model is how it should be. And so when our students graduate, they essentially have 6 months membership with our in our building, so that, you know, they can come work out of there while they're searching for jobs. But more importantly, like, our focus, again, when I was talking, it's really on getting them jobs. So we have the greatest career services manager named Maria Montoya that works with our students from day one. Throughout this whole 6 months, with their resume, with, you know, reaching out to people that have similar jobs that they want to grab coffee with and learn more about, going to different events, presentation, how their GitHub looks, how their resume looks, how, you know, they should be out at certain events talking to people or giving presentations. So everything we do is about that. Like, we always say, we're not going to place you because that's not what job is. Like, right. That's not how this works. I don't tell you to go somewhere. You choose what fits you. But in that world, we give as many of the assets and resources that we have with companies, which is most of them, and kind of support to make sure that you do get a job, because that's all we care about, is that you can get a job afterward. That's when I say, like, there's two ways to approach this. It's either sell somebody to go in on the front side and maybe not care on the back side as much. We focus entirely on making sure that you get a job and that you have the skills that are needed to get a job. Now, with that said, we can't guarantee that you get a job, but everything that we do with our program and how we approach things is so that you have a development job and you have the skills to get a development job at a large company, a small company, a medium company, whatever you kind of feel works best for you.
Okay. So you touched on a few good points, and I know you're speaking mainly representing Galvanize, but for some of our listeners, because they're not all in Arizona, they're worldwide, let's say you don't have a Galvanize near you, but you still want to entertain some of these other boot camps. You know, what do you think they need to consider to really differentiate this is a good boot camp to this is not as much of the good boot camp, maybe a bad boot camp?
Yeah, so the first thing I would say is definitely realize that name means nothing in terms of maybe your brand is only as good as the people and the product that you're producing, I guess is what I'll say. So there's certain people that are using other colleges as their branding. They just pay them for their name to give legitimacy to people that don't know better, but when it comes to hiring, doesn't really help, right? So you have to first be aware of what the name means in your community, what Galvanize means to Phoenix, what it means to Denver, what it means whatever it is that you're going, the program you're going to, find out what that name means to hiring managers and people. And typically, people are pretty open about their thoughts on a lot of that. And then next is kind of looking at the program itself. Yes, a lot of people get caught up in what stack are you teaching? You're teaching me Angular. You're teaching me React. You're teaching me Vue. You're teaching me PHP, Ruby. And it's not, I wouldn't focus as much on that as the actual hours that you're physically there and putting in work. Because again, there's so many different options where, like, somebody will tell me 3 months and their 3 months is, you know, 150 hours, where my 6 months is like 700 hours, you know. So kind of understand the different hours and in-class, like, time that is being committed and that you're really getting out of there, because there are differences. And then ultimately, like, all really people really want to know is if they're going to get a job. I think that's 99.9% of the time when I talk to people and I kind of am really going to their core of what they're considering. It's, hey, if I do this, will I get a job? So find out. Don't listen to placement numbers, because placement numbers are bullshit. They're absolutely, I don't know if we can cuss on the podcast, but
you're fine.
We can't, we can bleep it out. But my background's in you know, data science as stuff, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of ways that people either hire a student for 4 hours and kind of manipulate these outlandish, like, 90% of our students get placement rates. Don't give me a percentage that lumps all students. I want either a finite number that says, hey, of your last cohort that qualifies, how many of those and what type of jobs, you know, but essentially what it goes to is understand, ask the people that are getting jobs what jobs they got. You know, like, there's a big difference between going and working at Allstate or being hired for 4 hours by you know, to go teach other juniors that, you know, are in the same program. Those are not convertible. And I think there's too many people that kind of live in this world of showing, throwing out a placement number, but there's really no substance behind it. So know where the students are going, know how they're doing in their jobs, right? Did they keep it? If they went to Allstate, are they still at Allstate?
Right.
If they went to USAA, are they still at USAA? If they went to a small company and they fired them instantly because they didn't have the qualifications, then, you know, that's an issue. So I think that's kind of the three major things that I would focus on. And again, I don't think you can walk out and get a development job with less than 600 hours. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I'm not saying that the programs were not originally built on this 3-month world. I think we've evolved past that. I think there's too many students that are coming. Like ASU has 20,000 engineering students. Whether you want to acknowledge that or not, like that is who you are competing against. So, you know, you have to be very well aware of that fact. So I think right now, 3 months really does require another 3 months of education on top of it, even if you do go that route. So that's kind of where I would say the biggest things that you should focus on as you're looking at, you know, the dev boot camps of the world or the hack reactors or, you know, all these other offerings.
Okay. So yeah. Again, you touched a lot of great points. So Chris, I want to throw out a hypothetical for you. So
okay.
Let's say I am brand new to the tech world and I'm not near galvanized, but I'm considering a boot camp. But I've also been told about, hey, you can learn how to code by just buying a $10 course on Udemy or Team Treehouse or Pluralsight. So how would you convince somebody like me to be like, oh, you could do those, but like you should probably consider the other route?
I mean, so I'm not here to convince either way, because quite frankly, I lived on Pluralsight. I lived on Treehouse. I lived on, you know, Udacity. I lived on Udemy. All those are essentially where I got my training. However, I will say with that being said, it took me 4 years doing that, because again, one thing that no one ever understands when they kind of commit to learning technology specifically is that if you're not careful, you're going to live in this world of learning a new, different, more efficient way to do the same thing. So, you know, whether it's jQuery, whether it's React, whether it's Vue, whether it's Aurelio, whether it's me just doing it straight, you know, in ES6, that, you know, these are all skills that you can and will learn progressively. But ultimately, they're the same way to do something. Me learning jQuery and then going to Angular, going to React, yes, they're different. But at the end of the day, they're still a front-end web page that took, you know.
Right.
They're solving the same problem. They're just doing it in a different, more efficient, more composable way. But at the end of the day, when you're going as a skill at those different times, right, you're applying with the same skill. So I think one thing that I kind of lived in a lot, though, was this just technology overload, right? It's word soup 90% of the time in this industry when you're learning stuff, because there's libraries, there are packages, there's languages, there's frameworks, there's everything. So I think one thing I will say is there's nothing that anyone can teach in these education programs that's not freely available. That's just not, it doesn't exist. Most of the information anyone can teach right now is freely available. Whether it's in blog posts, whether it's in YouTube videos, whether it's Pi video, whether it's, you know, conference videos, whatever it is, a lot of the core knowledge is openly out there. So I think the thing for the self educators, that they have to really fight is that routine, and kind of getting yourself to to commit to a 9-to-5. If you really want to do this, you can absolutely work 9-to-5 every day in your life and do it. I 100% believe that. I just, as a individual, I don't have that kind of discipline internally. And also at the same time, you don't have the support to get you unstuck. I think there's a point when everyone develops and when they're actually building code and solving problems in code and working on things, there's a point where it's efficient to be stuck on something because it's really making you search for that answer. It's really making you search your brain. It's really making you search online. It's really making you search Stack Overflow. You know, check the way, you know, your outputs and console log, whatever it is. There's an efficient point where struggling is good. Then there's a point of diminishing returns where, you know, you've done so much, but at the same time, like, if somebody just came in and helped you fix this, you've already gained all you can out of this situation. Now it's time to move on. And I think that's the biggest thing that our kind of program offers, right? Is an individual there that's pushing you to the brink, but then a safety net there if you happen to fall off the edge. It's kind of how I view it. In terms of kind of the programs and, you know, there's efficiency in there, of course, with the curriculum. But ultimately, again, I think it's really that discipline and that support is kind of what, you know, all in-person educational institutions offer.
Okay. So, Chris, can you tell us any success stories that you've seen come out where you're just like, wow, I can't believe that student is doing some amazing stuff?
I mean, I'm blessed to have so many success stories. When I started this journey, I believed that anyone could learn and get a job in development. But I'd never tested it, right? I thought it was a thing. But you really, like, you just say that. You haven't proved it. And at this point, I will tell you that I can definitively tell you that anyone can learn this. Anyone can be a developer, in my opinion, with the effort, the hard work, the dedication. So for one thing, like, I'll just, as a blanket statement, say that is 100% true. And there are multiple stories at Galvanize in my life in the last year that have guaranteed that is true in my heart. So when I tell people that, and I'm not saying it's going to be easy, I'm not saying that everyone learns at the same rate. You still might have to, you know, it might be 3 months longer for you to work on something to get a job. It might be, you know, whatever it is, but I think anyone can learn. The one success story that stands out, because quite frankly, one of the most gifted, aspiring, and exciting developers that I know right now is one of our students, and he's just the strides he makes is baffling. Like I said, when I mentioned one of our students got a job in Python, so he essentially graduated our program. He did win one of the ASU hackathons because he was he didn't want to pay out-of-state tuition, essentially. Electrical engineer, had been, you know, a couple years of college, but didn't want to, you know, hadn't really written a lot of code, hadn't had his hands on any code really. It's more just the college experience in the first 2 years, as opposed to the engineering side, but he didn't want to pay out of state tuition when he moved here. So, it was like, hey, I really need to update my development skills. I think that'd be good for an electrical engineer, you know. Not really knowing anything past, you know, maybe C++ semester or whatever with embedded systems, but came in and just found a passion for it. And, you know, over the last probably year or so has, you know, probably written more code than I can even imagine just in that commitment. But, you know, got a job writing Python at Choice Hotels. I've had two of my friends that are very distinguished web/DevOps developers hired him to work on, you know, AWS deployments. He's given machine learning talks, the strides that he's made, kind of in his career, is shocking, even to the point of, you know, anyone that kind of asks me about him, I'm like, please, you like need him on your team. So I think that's one story of many that kind of comes to my mind. The reason that one kind of sticks there is just because of who he is and just his personality and how impressive and humble he is while he kind of goes on this journey. And the fact I got to kind of see that all the way through is probably the most inspiring story I've seen, I guess.
It sounds pretty cool, man. It sounds like we got to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you let me know when you want him.
Awesome, man. Well, Chris, thank you for everything today. And really, last question for you, you know, what's next for Chris in 2018?
So, I mean, what's next for Chris is, you know, just continuing to push this needle forward. I think it's really my effort now to focus on larger events and kind of making more people kind of take recognition for the Phoenix tech community. That is my passion. That is what I love. And that is kind of where I found my role. So whether it's, you know, large scale hackathons, large scale events, supporting other large, you know, conferences, you know, videos from experts in Phoenix, whatever it is, it's time for other markets to really start taking more notice of what's going on here in our tech scene. And that's my passion. And that's what I'll probably spend all of 2018 is kind of pushing that message to everyone that's in this state and everyone that's out of this state, kind of how awesome this community is for technology, you know, companies, technology, individuals.
Awesome, man. Well, we here on the podcast, we 100% support you because, yeah, I agree, man. I feel like Phoenix is just one of those areas where, like, we are growing. I already kind of consider it a tech hub, but yeah, we're trying to take it to the next level. So we are right there with you, trying to support you. And before we end today's episode, Chris, how can our listeners find you? Twitter, Instagram, projects, anything you want to share? Are you doing any upcoming speeches, anything like that?
So I'm always out in the community. So two meetups that I personally run are the Learn to Code Phoenix and the Learn Data Science Phoenix. But I am blessed enough to help and kind of promote and be ultimately a cheerleader for all the other meetups in our community. So I do have a newsletter that comes out every Monday if you want to know all of the technical or entrepreneurial events. So you can sign up phoenixtechnews.com. It's just a MailChimp link, but every Monday I send out kind of all of the events that you can physically go meet some people. We need more IRL in life. And then LinkedIn is pretty much my jam at this point. So it's just Chris Huey. I think I actually even have a specific tag of Nerd Nation. If you do the / Nerd Nation, I think I come up, which is awesome. And I love myself for thinking that was a good idea at some point in my life.
Nice, man.
Yeah. Or on Facebook or on anything. Yeah. If you just type Chris Huey in, you can find me, but, it's like, hopefully, if you're in the Phoenix market, you'll just see me in the community walking around. So, come introduce yourself. I love to, you know, meet other people.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you for being on the podcast. I will make
sure. Thanks, Caleb.
Yeah, man. I really enjoyed this episode. Cause you really went over some things. I think you really broke the perception of what people had for boot camps and programs similar. So again, thank you for being on our podcast. I'm going to do my best to link all of his information in the show notes. And yeah, guys, another great episode of the People in Tech podcast. Thank you again, Chris, for being on. And
thank you.
And we are out. Peace.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.